This podcast is brought to you by Local Silver Mint in Ware, New Hampshire. For the best selection of silver and gold, visit the Local Silver Mint showroom in tax-free New Hampshire today. Online at localsilvermint.com.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
I said to Taylor after that segment, I like Joe Gruder's. I feel confident now going into the midterms. He goes, yeah, that's his job. His job is to make you feel that way.
I'm not saying he's not. He's good at his job. He is.
He is.
He's been an effective chairman thus far.
Yeah, he seems like he's all about the nuts and bolts, which I appreciate. I don't like, if there's a chairman who's too flashy, that's not. And really, that goes for all politicians now. With the exception of Trump, because that is just who he is.
Don't gnome it up.
Don't gnome it up. We should make that into a t-shirt. Don't gnome it up. If you're taking glamour shots, you leave the glamour shots to me. Okay, politicians? It's like they all want to be podcasters. They all want to be influencers. Hey, there's plenty of microphone equipment to go around if that's what you want to do. But if you want to be in politics, then you got to be a little boring. There's going to be some boring stuff. Okay, Rosa DeLauro, you're going to have to read some of the statutes. What do you think of when you hear the word statutes?
The statutes versus statues on Seinfeld.
One of the greatest. I can't say the word without thinking of Jerry Seinfeld looking at Kramer and saying,
I think you're wrong.
Statute. Oh, yes, it's a statue of limitations.
Don't take raw milk. It is dangerous to your health.
Trump is speaking now at the White House honoring military mothers. And we are going to talk a little bit now about the White House Correspondents Association shooter who that judge apologized to earlier this week for his conditions in his jail cell. You know, he was being watched on suicide watch, and the judge was very upset about this. It really disturbed him that the conditions, the accommodations were not up to what he would want for this attempted assassin. And we now are finding out through the New York Post that the deranged shooting suspect, Cole Allen, they've dropped the middle name, I've noticed. Now they're just going by Cole Allen. I think they really were thinking about what we were talking about, Taylor, which is, are we calling him by three names because people called him by three names, or because we feel as though whenever there's an attempted assassination, the assassin has to be three names?
It's like when a news reporter sees a Hispanic name and they do the accent. It's the same thing. They do the three names.
Enough with the three names. Okay.
It's like any D.C. scandal. It has to be something gate. Or any scandal at all now.
Vrabel gate.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And so Cole Allen may have been triggered by the Iran war when he stormed the event and allegedly tried to assassinate President Trump. They have, in this report, a critical incident note, and it was first obtained by Reuters. It offers the clearest evidence yet on a possible tipping point that led to the heinous attack. The suspect criticized U.S. actions in the war in several social media posts, and prosecutors and court documents have alleged that Allen disagreed with Trump politically and wanted to fight back against government policies and decisions that he found morally objectionable. To which Obama and the rest of the Democrats said, I guess we'll never know. I guess we will never know what motivated this man. You can't even, if someone's writing a manifesto, the whole purpose of the manifesto is so that it's not shrouded in mystery. They're trying to show you their work, okay? They're trying to show you, hey, you know how I got here outside the Hilton Hotel with a gun charging at Secret Service agents? Let me show you how I got from point A to point B. I'm going to show you my work with this manifesto so I don't leave any stone unturned and there's no question marks as to why I'm doing this. And they can write a manifesto, they can release it to the press, or it can be put out in the media, and they still all go, I just can't figure out what was going through his head. I just don't understand what the impetus was for this. Now, speaking of, I just mentioned Obama because he's been very, very outspoken about this situation and, you know, that there is no motivation here. We don't know the motivation just yet. He did an interview with Stephen Colbert. And it wasn't on the Colbert late night show, but it was very similar. This is what Stephen Colbert does now. He interviews Democrats about whatever they want to be interviewed about. And I wanted to play this cut of Obama because he's an empath, you know? It's like he's, if you think that he's worried about the far left nuts that are taking over his party, the anti-Semites that are harassing janitors at these college campuses, if you think he's worried about any of that, you'd be wrong. He's worried about you. Take a listen to Barack Obama. This is cut 17.
The next generation really wants things to change. So you have great leaders. You have people like Abigail Spanberger and Mikey Sherrill, very centrist. Yeah. But then you have further left, like AOC or Zoran Mamdani. Yeah. What direction do you think would be best for this party to actually achieve change?
Well, two things I want to say. First, you're right. The presidential center is nonpartisan. And the reason I want to mention that is because I'm worried about the Republican Party, not just the Democratic Party. When I was president, people would ask me, well, what change would you like to see in Washington? I'd say, I'd love a loyal opposition. I'd love a Republican Party that was conservative in some ways, that you know, didn't agree with me on a whole bunch of stuff, but
that I could still be. Can you pause it? First of all, every time I play him, I always am reminded of how brutal it was when I was working for Howie and Barack Obama was still president. Like, you forget how just indulgent he is with the pauses and the going round and round and round we go. But the other thing is, all this can be boiled down to, like, why he's feigning concern for us. I'm worried about the Republicans. I want it to go back to the way it used to be. Do you know why he wants to go back to the way it used to be? Because we used to lay down and die. We used to curl up in the fetal position and be like, you can just take whatever you want. It's fine. We're principled conservatives. You can just keep beating us. It doesn't matter. No, no, no. You want us to go back to being losers. So that's what you're reminiscing about. You're reminiscing about the fact that we used to be losers, and because of Donald Trump and some other strong people in the party, we are no longer going to go along with that. And that's why you're sad. That's why there's nothing worse, Taylor, than a person who's pretending to have your best interest in heart. It's so patronizing and sanctimonious. Like, I want you to succeed. I want you to be strong. I want a strong conservative party. You want a conservative party that you can beat. You want a conservative party that is weak and feckless. And trust me, there are still elements of the party, Barack, rest assured, that are still like that. But because that's not the dominating characteristic now of the Republican Party, is that we'll just go along with whatever Democrats want. We won't put up a fight. That's why he's sad. And by the way, he wants to say, well, he's asked about what are you concerned about with the Democrats? And his first thought is, I'm concerned about the Republicans. Worry about your own game, okay? There's plenty there to keep you busy. There's plenty there to worry about on your own side with these far left nuts. And want to know how nutty they've become? The John Fetterman is the most conservative, or no, that's not even the right word, the most sane Democrat going, and he's being torn to pieces by the party for his support of Israel and for not going all out progressive, far left fanatic. And take a listen to Van Jones explaining this on CNN. This is Cut 18.
Look, I think he is a moderate Democrat, and that should not be illegal in this party. My God, you have to agree on 100% of 100% of the Berkeley, California agenda to be a Democrat? It doesn't make any sense. Like, it just shows you how nutty things have gotten, that somebody who wants to stick up for Israel and doesn't want an open border is somehow now has to be a Republican. That's completely insane.
Yeah, it's, and you're never going to be progressive enough. I mean, I know they keep referencing Mamdani, like Stephen Colbert brought up Mamdani. He got big applause. Mamdani is also starting to see that there's no pleasing the far left with your ideas that are never going to work, because it's never enough. Doesn't matter how much free stuff you give out, and he can't really give out any because there's no money in New York City right now because all the billionaires keep leaving. There's never enough money. There's never enough you can do for people to keep them happy. It's like this, if you're in a relationship with a terrible partner and they just take, 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 and you're like, oh, someday they'll get me back for this. No. This is how these Democrat socialists operate. They want the world. They're like, you know what they're like, Taylor? It's like Willy Wonka. I want an Oompa Loompa now. They just want. And then they also want to vilify the people that make a lot of these programs not affordable, but that pay for a lot of these programs. And a perfect example of it.
And you'll be in a world of pure imagination.
A perfect example of it that Obama should be worried about, that Mamdani should be worried about, is Ken Griffin. Because Mamdani went outside his mega penthouse in New York City and talked about this pied-à-terre tax that he was putting on New Yorkers. And what that means is New Yorkers who pay taxes but then don't really use a lot of resources because they tend to live in other places beyond the property they have in New York, they're going to get an extra tax for not using the resources in New York City, for not setting up shop there full time. And he was really proud of this. He made this creepy video in front of Ken Griffin's house. Now, this is in the same city where Luigi Mangione shot a rich healthcare CEO in the head and killed him, a father of two. So I don't know if really enticing people to look at this evil billionaire whose building is behind me, I don't know if that's the smartest idea or the safest way to play politics right now. But listen to Ken Griffin on why Mamdani, he's also been inspired. Like Barack and all these people, they want to talk about how Mamdani is so inspirational and he's so amazing and all this stuff he's doing. Well, he's inspiring a lot of people, but maybe not in the way they imagined. This is Cut 15.
So where does that leave us at 350 Park?
That leaves us with the fact that we went to Miami and revised our building plan to make it a bigger office building.
You're bailing?
So what do we do at 350 is still a point of discussion internally, but what is no longer a point of discussion is that Miami is now, you know, when we moved from Chicago, there was a debate between New York and Miami. It's unquestionably true that we made the right choice. I'll leave it at that. It's unquestionably true that we made the right choice. And now what the mayor of New York has made clear to my partners, and principally my New York partners, is that we need to double down on our bet in Miami, because we want to be in a state that embraces business, that embraces education, that embraces personal freedom and liberty, and that embraces people having an opportunity to live the American dream.
Wait, you don't want to be in a state where they hate you and they're celebrating a guy who just shot a rich person in the head? Like, you don't want to be in a state like that. You don't want to be in a state that hates you and hates your business and wants to punish you. What's wrong with you, bro? Oh,
I'm leaving today.
Yeah, it, I love how she says you're bailing. It's like, dude, we're escaping. We're doing, you know what we're, if I were Ken Griffin, I don't know why the implication with you're bailing is like he's doing something wrong. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm just reading the signals that they're sending me and making an appropriate decision based off that. You keep telling me you hate my guts. You keep telling me you don't need me. You keep telling me get the hell out of here. You keep telling me I'm evil. You keep telling me all these things that you'd be better off without me. Well, okay, I'm taking the message. How many times do people have to tell you something before you go, you know what? I'm going to believe you. I'm going to believe that you really hate my guts. And if you hate my guts so much, I guess you hate my taxes. I guess you hate my money. I guess you hate all these jobs I'm providing. We will go elsewhere. And there's other places. I think this is a good way to operate in life. You always should go where they want you. Like, this is a message for young kids. If you're applying to colleges or something, and there's a college that gives you a little bit of money, yes, it's great because you're going to have a little bit of financial aid, but it's also something to be said for going to a place that wants you. That's a good message in life. A lot of people get stuck on like wanting to be somewhere where they're not wanted. Don't go down that road. He wants to go to Miami because they're going to embrace him. They're going to incentivize him to be there. That's a smart decision. Instead of being in New York City, where he's like persona non grata for having a lot of money and employing a lot of people. That's something Barack Obama should worry a little bit about. These extremists in his party. But no, he's worried about us. Everybody's talking about weight loss injections because the results are so dramatic. They work by lowering blood sugar and reducing appetite. So what if you're looking to lose weight, but you're not interested in the painful weekly injections, especially when you hear a lot about these side effects that I think can sound scary to a lot of people? Well, I have the answer for you, and that answer is Lean. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to lower your blood sugar, burn fat by converting it into energy, and curb your appetite and cravings so you're not as hungry. Now, Taylor has noticed a difference.
Yep, I'm down a few sizes. I'm down 15 pounds. And even over the weekend, it was my daughter's third birthday. So there was cake and there was, pasta. So you indulge a little bit on the weekends sometimes. But even with continued usage of Lean, I've not noticed any gains. I've not backtracked at all on the scale. I'm still consistent. I'll get back to losing weight more consistently as I buckle down, pun intended, throughout the rest of the week. And I will look forward to seeing the results this weekend and continuing on as long as I'm on Lean. You mentioned the scary side effects. What I find scary, aside from the side effects of GLP-1s, is what you see in front of you. I see people that are obviously on Ozempic. They've got the Ozempic face and they've got, you know, all of these different, they just look gaunt and malnourished and weird. It's not natural. Lean is a natural supplement and it's helping you take off those pounds in a natural way. It's just expediting the process, making your body more efficient at what it already is supposed to be doing. And with a balanced diet and exercise routine, you're going to see those results a lot faster, especially as you get older. I find that as you get older, it's tougher to lose the weight.
Things slow down a little
things
bit.
Things slow down. You slow down. You don't have as much energy as you did when you were in your 20s. So this really gives people a boost where they may need help getting over that precipice, that plateau they've been stuck at for a while.
Yeah, so visit TakeLean.com and enter Grace for your discount. Again, it's 20% off and free rush shipping when you go to TakeLean.com and you use promo code Grace at TakeLean.com. We'll be right back.
The Grace Curley Show will return. This is the Grace Curley Show.
We had RNC chairman and Florida State Senator Joe Gruters on earlier, and one of the texters said, he's no Michael Steele, I'll tell you that. That reminds me, and a good point by 617, it reminds me, Michael Steele goes on all these shows. I know at one point, you have to check this for me, Taylor. I know at one point he had a show. I think he was part of the show that replaced Joy Reid. I don't know if it's still up and running. Hasn't been making waves, I'll tell you that much. And he's always, when he goes on TV, he has always promoted his chyron on the bottom is always Michael Steele, former RNC chair. Do you know when he was the head of the RNC?
2007?
2009 to 2011. There's got to be a moratorium on that kind of stuff. There has to be a statute. There has to be a statute of limitations on how long you can use a title. Okay? Because I can tell you this. If I left here and in 10 years I was still saying executive producer of the Howie Carr Show, which I'm not anymore. I haven't been for a long time. There I'd be getting calls like, hey, maybe we mix up the bottom thing. What have you done for me lately, Michael Steele? And by the way, before you think I'm an idiot, you can think of I'm an idiot, but for other reasons beyond this. I get why they do it, because they want to add in this idea like, he's like Bob Mueller. He's like all these conservatives. He's a conservative, and he hates Trump. It's supposed to make us think. It's like a seminar caller. I used to really like your show. I used to be a big fan, and then you lost me. And I'm supposed to go, oh, no. Well, this person has credibility because they used to like me. That's how we're supposed to feel about Michael Steele. But there's got to be a statute on how long you can use these titles for. 2011? This is like when you go, what do I always say? When you go to the restaurant, it says Best of Boston 2014. 2014? Take that off the flipping door. What have you done for me lately? Good God. Any new dishes to report? Michael Steele is still presenting himself as the former RNC chairman. It's like, have you done anything else impressive since?
He still hosts the weeknight on MS Now.
Miss that.
Yeah, at what point do you become talk show host instead of former.
You know what? It's probably, there's probably a rule on that too. A certain amount of people, like over 100 people, have to actually watch your program before you can call yourself a talk show host. Perhaps he hasn't met that threshold yet. But hey, there's still time, Michael Steele. We'll be back. We're talking Marco Rubio at the podium and Iran, this plan that's being talked about, written about in Axios and other spots. We'll be right back.
The Grace Curley Show is on the air.
And, you know, I love the name Melody because for a long time, you know, they have spell correct and word correct on these crazy machines that we use to put out truths, or they used to be called tweets. And every time I wrote Melania, it would correct to Melody. So I do things, and I work very fast, very fast. Blah, 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 and I talk about it, and I say, and Melania is fantastic, and happy Mother's Day, Melania, our great First Lady, Melania. But it would spell correct and word correct to Melody. And sometimes I wouldn't proofread it, and I'd say, and I would get just absolute decimated. These people would decimate. They said he didn't know the name of his wife. He keeps calling her. And I said, what the hell is wrong with this machine? I didn't know about that little feature, but I got that corrected eventually. You know who corrected? The military. I said, come here. You got to correct this. You're killing me. I took more abuse. She's been called Melody a lot. Anyway, I had to explain it to you this way. I stood up here to explain it to you.
Trump having a great time today at the White House honoring these military mothers. And he also did talk about Beyond the Melody, Melania, which I always do love those. I love to understand what's going through his head sometimes. And it's funny when he can talk about himself and be self-aware. He realizes he's a madman on social media.
Kofefi.
Kofefi, indeed. And he also did talk a lot about Iran, saying they cannot get a nuclear weapon, which we will get into that in just a minute. And this memorandum that is supposedly being negotiated between Iran and the U.S. and Pakistan, obviously a major player here. And so a lot of sources out of Pakistan saying that we're close to some sort of deal. I don't buy that, but we'll get into some of the details. But first, today's poll question is brought to you by Manzi Appraisers and Restoration in Woburn. Come to Manzi Appraisers in Woburn Thursday, May 14th from 2 to 5 for a live Howie Carr broadcast remote. Bring your special heirloom to get a value from Dave Manzi and watch Justin Manning from JJ Manning Auctioneers auction off Karen Reed's SUV. And, of course, Howie will have copies of his book, Mass Corruption, for sale. Thursday, May 14th from 2 to 5 at Manzi Appraisers. That's 22 Prospect Street in Woburn. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is who is the most loathsome Democrat running for governor of California? Antonio Villaraigosa, Javier Becerra, Matt Mahan, Katie Porter, or Tom Steyer?
I'm going to say Katie Porter. I mean, she just, they all are bad, with the exception of the Republicans. They all are terrible candidates. I don't agree with any of their policies. They all seem to want to be more, they want to out Newsom, Gavin Newsom, because he's done such a bang up job in the state of California. They're like, you know what? It's just, we just need more hair gel. That's all we need, is a little bit more cowbell and some more hair gel, and we are going to really sink this sucker into the ground. But out of all of the Democrats, if we were to do the, like, who would you want to get a beer with test, I'm opting out, even if it's a paid for beer. I'm saying I'm good, I'm going home. But if I had to choose, which is how we do these poll questions, you have to choose who you're going to sit down with. Katie Porter's got to be the last on the list. I don't think I'd enjoy that conversation. I think there'd be a lot of yelling.
79% say Katie Porter is the most loathsome. 11% say Tom Steyer. 7% say Becerra. And it's funny because even when she was answering the question about being a bitch, really, she cut off Caitlin Collins and it wouldn't let her finish her question. So has she really changed?
No, I don't think. Are people possible of change?
No.
Yes.
No.
But in small increments. I do not think you change from being a mega bitch to being all of a sudden like, let me think about how people feel about this. That's too, especially at that point in your life. She's not a young whippersnapper. It's like you're, if your whole personality is based off bossing people around and being mean to people, I don't think that changes. Although I still have hope for you, Taylor.
Oh, thank you. I'm not going to change. I'm going to get worse.
That's usually how it goes. Yeah. People just get worse.
I'm honest, if anything.
I should play, though, just a few other cuts here, because there was a lot of focus on Javier Becerra, Biden's former HHS, because he's the front runner now. He's the one, as far as Democrats go, he seemed to have picked up the most momentum from Eric Swalwell, Mr. Hootersville, bowing out of the race or being kicked out of the race. And the funny part about it is that the Democrats are mad at him because they don't think he's enough of a Bernie bro. You know, oh, you're not woke enough on XYZ. And then the real scandal here, Steve Hilton actually referred to. Take a listen to Steve Hilton. This is Cut 12.
My view is that it's a bit rich for Javier to talk about following the law when he is mired personally in a corruption scandal where his former chief of staff, Sean McCluskey, when Javier was appointed by Joe Biden to be health secretary, he wanted his chief of staff to go with him. The salary wasn't enough. So what did they do? They took money from Javier's campaign account to top up his salary by funneling it to Dana Williamson, Gavin Newsom's former chief of staff, so that it was paid to this guy's wife.
Secretary
All of
Becerra,
that is illegal. It is against state law. It's against federal law. My running mate for Attorney General, Michael Gates, has this evening written to Javier Becerra to make it clear that when he is Attorney General, Javier will be investigated and if necessary, prosecuted for these crimes.
Yeah, I was glad he brought it up because that is a huge story that's not getting nearly enough attention. And they want to hammer Becerra. It's just such a typical Democrat thing. They want to hammer him on not being far left enough. And the actual story here, they don't want to talk about at all. Hence, like the, okay, we're done here. You're making too much sense. But I think the other part of this that should be all Californians need to hear is the fact that these Democrats on the stage want to give free health care to illegal aliens. Take a listen to Katie Porter. This is Cut 11.
Congresswoman Porter, your thoughts on the idea of funding health care for undocumented immigrants statewide?
Yes.
Yes. And
that's, by the way, what I think Californians deserve as answers to these questions, Alex.
And for critics who say that we...
Oh, my gosh. They'll never learn. And I won't feel bad, by the way. I will not feel bad if they get Katie Porter, if they get Javier Becerra, if they get Tom Steyer, the self-hating billionaire who wants to give commercial driver's licenses. They all think it's racist not to let people who can't read English, not let them have commercial driver's licenses so they're not driving around 18-wheelers. It hasn't worked out well either because, as you saw in Florida, one guy got his CDL from California, went to Florida, and killed a bunch of people on the highway because he didn't know how to drive. They all think that's racist, though, to point that out. These people are so far gone, and you would kind of think that they look at Newsom and they would look at his approval rating. They would look at just the results of what he has done to California. And I know he spins them. I know he sits in his tight jeans with his legs crossed and he pats his thighs and he does his shimmy and he tries to tell you that everybody's moving into California. I saw the Babylon Bee said, California has the most people moving to the state if you don't count all the people leaving. Like, this is how he puts a spin on something. He can really take a statistic and do wonders with it. But I'm just shocked that none of these Democrats, like Tom Steyer or anyone, says there's a real chance here that we could get normal Democrats in this state who want to feel safer, who don't want homelessness running rampant, who don't want to spend billions of dollars on trains that go to nowhere. We could really bring them in here if we just had a sane person. And instead, you get Katie Porter and all of the rest of these Democrats saying they want to give free health care to illegal aliens, which, by the way, they're already getting. So I don't really know why that's an issue right now. They're just doubling down on, we're going to keep letting them get free health care, is really what she's saying. But just a pathetic showing. This is a really sad, sad race to watch. I wanted to mention here, before we dive into Iran, that this is a breaking news story. The FBI has raided the office of a powerful Virginia Democratic lawmaker and a close ally of Governor Abigail Spanberger. as part of a federal corruption and illegal marijuana sale probe. Longtime state senator L. Louise Lucas, a major broker in Virginia politics who stumped for Spanberger on the campaign trail in 2025, is now at the center of a major FBI corruption probe, according to federal law enforcement sources. Agents executed court-authorized criminal search warrants at her office in Virginia, according to federal law enforcement, nearby cannabis dispensary co-owned by Lucas. At least three people were detained during the raid. The state senator arrived at her office as the raids were being conducted. Ooh, bad timing. Hey, what are you guys doing here?
Oh, that was today.
Oh, shoot. She told Fox News that she had no idea what the FBI agents were doing at her office. Hang tight. You'll find out. No spoilers here. I'm sure they'll tell you soon enough.
Oh, they'll post it on their Twitter. Oh, sorry. That was the last administration that did that.
The search warrants were signed off by a federal judge who agreed there is probable cause to conduct the raids. The raids put more political pressure on Spanberger, who already is facing tumbling polling numbers. This is from Fox News. Now, that's what's going on in Virginia. Let's switch gears here and talk about Iran. Now, the markets are rallying on the optimism, on the hope of a deal. Marco Rubio talked about this from the podium yesterday. I wanted to play cut three.
This regime is not... Guys, I know I've said this. I think I said this in my hearing before the Senate when I got confirmed. I don't know of any country in the world where there's a bigger difference between the people and the people who run the country. Okay, this country is run by radical Shia clerics. And that's not what Iran and the Iranian people are. Now, they may be Shia, but they're not radicals and they're not clerics. And they just want a normal life and a regular life. And in many ways, a very cosmopolitan country with an incredible history and incredible legacy and the like. So there's this huge divide between the people of Iran, whom we sympathize with, and who the president sympathizes with, because they're the ones suffering. Look, the world is a victim of Iran, okay? The world is a victim of Iran because they're terrorists, because of what they're doing now in the Straits. But the people of Iran are daily victims of the regime, and the president has deep sympathy for what they're going through. And I think he's just expressing that sympathy and that frustration that they don't have the ability to do more to get rid of this regime that has crushed this country and isolated it from the world, which is a country that shouldn't be isolated from the world because its people are phenomenal.
Yeah, it's you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who can talk about these issues with the ease and confidence that Marco Rubio can. And since he's discussing Iran, I think it's important to note that there is talk of this 14-point proposed deal. I'm skeptical of it because I don't believe anything that comes out of the Iranian regime. And I also think some of this could be just an attempt to help the markets rally, which they are doing just that. But let's take a listen to Peter Doocy. This is Cut One.
We've got the details of this 14-point plan, according to Axios. Under the banner, U.S. and Iran closing in on one-page memo to end the war, we've got these. A five-year ban on nuclear enrichment, which would be less than the 20-year ban President Trump previously said he didn't like. There would be limits of 4% enrichment after that. There would be a ban on underground nuclear facilities, a vow to never seek a nuclear weapon, commitment to enhanced nuclear inspections, and an end to restrictions on travel through the Strait of Hormuz. President Trump, though, is telling the New York Post it's too soon right now to schedule a new round of in-person talks with Iran. So this is a very high-stakes game of telephone, still led by Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner.
Yeah, and he did say that we are pausing Project Freedom and, you know, in the hopes that something's going to come together here. He also put out a Truth Social yesterday saying if they don't agree, the bombing starts. That actually might have been earlier today. So all this chatter has made the price of oil plummet for today, at least lowest in 2 weeks. And perhaps, like I said, perhaps that's the point of the whole thing. I just don't think it ends in a way that involves one of these sham agreements. And obviously it's too soon to tell. We need to know the particulars. But the particulars that I've been reading, none of that screams, oh, Trump would be on board for this. Like unfreezing assets and everything else. It was very Obama-esque.
I mean, this just sounds to me like another Iran nuclear deal.
Yes, exactly. I was reading and thinking the same thing. I'm like, there's no way Trump's on board with this.
Yeah, I mean, even a 4% enriched uranium and stepped up checks on what they're up to and no underground facilities, I'm still very leery. This has not been the most honest organization to deal with, to say the least.
Yeah, they've got to build back the trust for sure. I will also mention, and I think this is one of the more important parts, is that even though Project Freedom is being paused and Project Freedom being guiding these vessels through the Strait of Hormuz, and that's being paused for a short period of time while they try to work out this deal, he did clarify that the blockade will remain in full force and full effect. That's always what I'm looking for, Taylor, when I'm reading through these Truth Socials, is please tell me the blockade is still in effect. Because to me, that is the most productive part of what we've seen over the last few weeks, is that even though you're not hearing about it, because they're not going to tell you, the IRGC is not going to be open about the fact that this is killing them, and our media here isn't going to try to find the full story either, because they don't want to make the IRGC look bad. That's the state of the American media. I don't think you can really fully understand the scope of just how damaging this is to Iran, that all of this oil is just building up and has nowhere to go. And so I do think it's going to lead to their collapse, hopefully sooner rather than later. When we come back, though, I played you a bit of Marco. Everyone's got Marco fever. You know, everyone's really loving Marco Rubio at the podium. He filled in for Caroline Levitt. I mean, the guy can do everything. And he had a cut about America yesterday in his press conference that's going viral. I want to play it. We'll end the show with it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Follow Grace on X at @G_Curly. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Howie's VIPs are in here and they're already causing commotion. Someone just said to me that he thinks Obama secretly likes Trump. That's the first I've ever heard of that. He was referencing when they were at, what funeral were they at? Was it George H.W.?
Yeah,
George H.W. And they were talking and they were laughing together. And you know what that does show, though? Whether or not Trump and Obama like each other behind the scenes, I don't know. But it does show you how fake everything is, because Obama's party, and he knows it, they're all about, it's a fascist takeover, he's Hitler 2.0. And then when Obama's sitting next to him, you'd think the two were going golfing in like the next hour. They're sitting there like yucking it up. So everything is so forced. I will mention, and I'm not going to play the cut because I can only take so much Obama in one day, but in that interview with Colbert, Obama was also saying that, you know, the White House shouldn't be able to direct the AG to prosecute whoever. So now we're getting lectures on politicizing or weaponizing the DOJ and the Attorney General's office from Barack Obama.
And then I said, boy, they look like two people that like each other. And we probably do. We have little different philosophies, right? But we probably do. I don't know. We just got along. But I got along with just about everybody.
Okay, so actually, you know what? I'm going to tell you how this conversation started with the VIPs, because that kind of goes into it. I was talking about Ted Turner, how he passed away today, 87 years old, media mogul, created CNN, TBS, TNT, Turner Classic Movies, you name it, Cartoon Network, Tell Jared, that's Jared's big network, all these different things. And I was on pins and needles, like we're waiting for the Truth Social. What's he gonna say? Oh God, here comes the obit from Donald Trump. That could be his next line of business when he's done being president. He just writes obits all day long for people. The craziest obits you've ever seen. And the obit came out, the little, you know, reflection from Trump, and it was actually very nice. And I said, it's a weird thing, Taylor, because you can't really figure out the things Trump's able to get over and the things he's not able to get over. There are people who I find very aggravating, who I think Trump should hate more than he does. And then there are people where I'm like, I wonder why he holds such a grudge against that person. I think that someone could unpack it, someone with a medical degree. All right, let's play a little bit of Marco Rubio yesterday. He was just killing it at the podium.
Yeah, look, I mean, my hope for America is what it's always been. I think it's the hope I hope we all share. We want it to continue to be the place where anyone from anywhere can achieve anything, where you're not limited by the circumstances of your birth, by the color of your skin, by your ethnicity, but frankly, it's a place where you are able to overcome challenges and achieve your full potential. I think that should be the goal of every country in the world, frankly, but I think in the U.S., we're not perfect. Our history is not one of perfection, but it's still better than anybody else's history, and ours is a story of perpetual improvement. Each generation has left the next generation of Americans freer, more prosperous, safer, and that is our goal as well. But it is a unique and exceptional country. And as we come upon this 250-year anniversary, I think we have a lot to learn and be proud of in our history. It is one of perpetual and continuous improvement, where each generation has done its part to bring us closer to fulfilling the vision that the founders of this country had upon its founding.
Marco Rubio, I'll see you all tomorrow.